New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Guys, welcome to the Men's Journal Everyday Warrior podcast. I'm your host, Mike Cirelli. We've got one of the all-time leading tacklers in the NFL. He was a beast on the field, and to watch him play was something special. Derek Johnson is with us today. And Derek, I got to be honest, I started at A&M for my undergrad 2000 to 2003. So yeah. We saw you guys decimate us. I don't think A&M beat you.
They did not. I was 4-0 against A&M.
Dude, that game has to come back.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's everybody talks about the OU and Texas game. That's a big deal, but that A&M game, I can't wait. I mean, this year, yeah, it'd be back this year.
Is it for the SEC?
Yeah, SEC. It's back this year.
And I'm sorry, UT's first season will be in the SEC this year.
This year, finally.
And again, I didn't play football. I love football because there's just so many analogies between football and like military strategy.
Absolutely.
It always seems like a wake-up call when any team leaves something like the Big 12 and steps in, because the SEC is just – it's like you guys get worn out from the season.
We do. And I tell you what, SEC, it's always been that big talk about – SEC is the best conference and all this stuff. But, I mean, we've been doing pretty good. And when we're on. So this is a great time for us to move to the SEC, because Texas is back now. The Longhorns are back. So being able to be at the top of our game or trending that way, I can't wait for us to go against the Alabamas and the Georgias and all these.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
Well, I mean, back in your day, though, the Big 12 was – strong.
No, absolutely.
And yes. It just seems like the SEC has emerged in the last, let's say, decade.
That's
one of the dominant leagues.
That is correct. When I was in school, it wasn't more about the SEC. It was
Big Ten.
Yeah, it was more Big Ten, more Big 12, but it was kind of talent was kind of spread out a little bit. Right now, it's a little more top heavy when it comes to the SEC, and we're moving that way. I'm sure it's going to benefit money wise, but recruiting and all that stuff. So it's every week's going to be. I've just kind of looked at the schedule. It's like every week it's like, oh, it's big hitters. Boom, boom, boom. So it's going to drive a lot of money here too.
Yes.
Of course, we travel well. So it's going to be good to go travel and see the Longhorns too.
Yeah, we are going to dive deep into your life. But before we do, we recently had a young girl who was the first NIAI athlete to take NIL money. She had a massive TikTok following before she went and played volleyball in college. What's your standpoint on the NIL? Because I love it. I do.
I love it. I love it because it's an opportunity for people that don't have much to get some money. And if you're responsible with it, it's going to be a life changing, right? It's going to, if you set it up the right way, especially that the less fortunate families that don't have much, to be able to come into money at a kid that's 18, 19 years old, that's pretty big deal. But there's pros and cons to everything, right? When I was in school, I didn't have that opportunity, right? But I had that motivation to say, man, I got to get there. I'm grinding, I'm scratching and clawing. And now it makes me, I won all these awards in college and did all that. And now I get a chance to go first round pick Kansas City Chiefs, and I'm boom, boom, boom. I think I still would have had that motivation if we hit, if we had, because that's who I am, if we had NIL back in the day. But I don't know. If you give me, you know, if you give me, you know, $500,000 as a freshman, I don't know. I don't know how my mindset would be. I just can't say that.
Well, I'll say this. It seems
good problem
illogical.
To have.
It's a great problem to have. It seems illogical that you would tell an 18-year-old who can go die for his country or her, who can legally start a business at 18, that they're going to crush their bodies to grow the endowment of a university. And it's almost like they wanted to keep the athletes under their thumb. I think the biggest revelation for me was watching the, why am I forgetting his name? Texas A&M quarterback. It'll come to me. Manziel, Johnny Manziel. Oh. And he grew the endowment. he grew the endowment for Texas A&M in 1 year from like $400 million to $800 million and didn't see a dime. And then they want to come down on him for making money for signing memorabilia.
Yeah.
It's
and he's, we know his story, and his story is out there. It's up there. There's some more stories like
yes.
that. Yeah. That it helped the school out, and just as far as monies and just the program. This is a athlete-based sport, especially when we talk about football. We bring so much money to the university. I mean, ridiculous amount, and
the most.
So being able to get compensated for that, being able to intermingle that finances with us playing, it's sticky because there's no gates right now. You know, it's kind of wild, wild west. Everybody's
transfer short, portal.
Yeah, everything. So you got some good representative, and you got some bad representatives when it comes to getting these kids paid, and just the mindset wise, it's I love Johnny's story. I mean, I'm looking at it, and now I look at it, I'm like, he's taking money. I'm like, oh, that's, you know, it's okay to me now. You know, you said that 20 years ago,
oh, yeah,
I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You did what? You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just where we at, and it makes sense, right? We're not, some people are coming down on them, but most people are like, we get it. I mean, it's legal now. So,
first off, you don't have to admit it, but Johnny Manziel, from a life perspective, was a complete and utter shit show.
Oh man,
he just
I don't see
with
how
the fame.
I don't see how, like, and I saw the story about him, you know, not studying and just, you know, just winging it. And when I look back on different, just the games that I watched him, I'm like, yeah, he is like. Every play is like is breaks down. He doesn't do anything in timing. Like, quarterback is all about get back, boom, this is your read, boom, boom, boom. If it's not here, go here. If not, run. I mean, every play was get back. I mean, he's going. And I'm like, it's kind of impressive. You kind of think about it for him to have that much success. Obviously, that ends the higher you get. But Johnny's a heck of a football player.
Yeah, he was. I'll say, though, I called the Cleveland Browns the killer of college hype quarterbacks. They always recruit some amazing quarterbacks in just that system. But I just probably made some enemies in
yeah,
Cleveland.
You did.
It's interesting. And, you know, with the transfer portal, why make a kid stick around a university where he just doesn't feel it's a cultural fit, or he can go get some playtime elsewhere? I know the Boston College coach, Jeff Hathley, just left for the NFL. I got to meet with him. Not a fan of the transfer portal. Mm. I think this is the time that coaches have to step up, both from a leadership and culture perspective, to create that homecoming and belonging, regardless if a player is not starting, you know, first string.
Yeah. So it's twofold. You're definitely going to have those times where a player says, man, I'm not getting treated right, or I just don't feel at home. This is not the place for me. Just fit-wise, you know, made a mistake, right? Some, you know, even a parent or outsiders, mentors will say, yeah, this is probably not going to work out good for you. Cool. Jump in the portal. Do that stuff, right? Because you have that opportunity. You don't have to sit out a year. But there's a lot of people in the transfer portal that you say, hey, man, you just jumping in there because you got a little resistance.
Yeah.
Where is the fight? Where is the overcoming? Because that's part of you getting better, right? The process. It's not about a perfect situation. It's like, what can you overcome? Because really, if you can fight through something that doesn't favor you, that's the sauce, right? That's like, man, I made it, right? Regardless on and off the field. And that's what I'm into. Now don't get me wrong. There are situations where you say, and you got to move. Yeah. But now, yes. I think it's oversaturated.
Yes. It's like the easy button.
Yeah. And we all hear about the people that are moving schools and jumping in the portal and getting out. We don't hear about the people that stay in the portal. There are some people that stay in the portal and made a wrong decision. So once you get off your team, once you say, hey, you know, I'm going from the University of Texas and I'm going to go do this, and you don't get picked up or you don't get to, it's like, you can't go back. Those are the situations that we don't really hear about, because that, you know, I don't know. It's a lot of those, yeah. Believe it or not.
Media's just not going to cover it.
Yeah.
So, you know, as I said, John Wellborn is one of the co-hosts on here. John made a claim at one point, and I believe it to be true, but he was, I think he took a DEXA scan when he was with the Philadelphia Eagles, 300 pounds at 8.5% body fat. And I called bullshit. I'm like, bullshit, goodness. Show me the scan. But he's always been into
That's
fitness.
That's crazy.
So as I look back in your life, one, born in Waco, Texas, yep. Waco High School.
Yep.
Did I see you had something like 30 plus tackles game?
That is correct. That's crazy you said that. I was thinking about that the other day. I'm like, I was thinking like, I don't really remember like me having 30. It was 30 official, but I just was thinking like, man, I really, like 2 days ago, I'm thinking like, I had 30 tackles in the game. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, you're doing all of the work. Now, they did run the ball 50 times. We played against a team called John Tyler. They used to do this. They used to have 10 running backs. They used to just throw a toss downhill play. It looks like a toss, but it's a downhill play. They would put all their athletes in the game. Whoever can carry a ball, they would put it in there, and they would just – it's like Novocaine. Eventually, it'll work. They actually beat us that game, barely.
You're kidding
beat us.
Me.
Yeah, so it was a really, really good game. But, yeah, I had 30 tackles, man, 30 tackles in one game. Then the game after that, I had 20 tackles. So people don't talk about that because, you know, it's just 20 tackles after a 30-tackle game. So it was 50 tackles in 2 weeks. I was like – I was a little tired in my senior year in high school.
So, I mean, you were triple sport Letterman,
yeah.
Basketball, track. Which one did you enjoy the most? Because I've heard professional athletes like, yeah, I became a professional football player, but I loved baseball.
Yeah. Football, for sure. That's just what it is. But second would probably be track. I play basketball all the time. I'm an athlete, so I love that. I even do that as a hobby now. But track, eventually, being a linebacker, you get a little bigger enough where it's like, all right, I'm not one of the little guys. I can't compete anymore. But I was running 10.5, 10.6 like in high school.
That is where my bullshit card comes. Yeah. I'm like, this guy is 6'4", 250.
You know what? I'll put it up in a minute on the internet.
You had to be amongst the fastest linebackers coming out of high school in the nation.
Absolutely. Yeah, the fastest linebacker. That was my strength at the end of the day. I wasn't crazy strong or whatnot. But when it comes to running, I was that's what I can do. Run. And I ran track, summer track and all that stuff since I was 9 or 10 years old. So
the strength, did that come when you finally got into an established program at UT? I mean, they're like, hey, you got the speed, let's put on the muscle.
That is correct. In high school, you get an opportunity in high school to lift a little, but you don't really take it serious because I'm better than everybody around me. And then when I got to college, it was like, all right, it's an even playing field. My talent is still, you know, pretty up there, but when it comes to really cultivating or just taking advantage of your physical ability, you gotta lift weights. You gotta be more explosive, and they have all the bells and whistles when it comes to getting stronger. And I was 205 pounds.
I was gonna ask how tall at that point. 6'2",
I was 6'3". Yep.
6'3"
at that time. 6'3", 205 pounds, walking into the University of Texas, and
you left at
and I left at 235
and 6'4".
Yep. 235, 6'4", and when you talk about getting stronger, it, you know, not just it helps you on the field, like actually be powerful and actually run faster, because I'm getting bigger, you need that strength so you can run the same as if you were 200 pounds. But being able to be healthy, all that stuff, like the little muscles, prehab work, just being able to be a just taking care of your body, learning that early, knowing that this is a long game, and football is a freaking killer on your body, man. There's so many people, so many talented guys I play with that they get hurt, and it's like, man, and some people get hurt easily than others, but there's sometimes it's like, you're not in the weight room, you know, you can't, you know, you're making a tackle and this arm is out here and it's just, you know, shoulder breaks down or pec pulls out or something like that. But just being able to be healthy, using that tool, getting stronger. And that's what I did.
I've got to assume moving from a high school program mm-hmm. to a school like the University of Texas football program, which UT doesn't take their football lightly. No, I mean, their boosters are all over them, the power of the boosters. That had to be, I'm assuming, a wake-up call. I'm sure they put you on, like, a high-caloric diet. You were in the gym daily.
Yeah, I was eating a lot. I was eating a lot.
To the point where you were tired of eating?
Yeah. Just because, I mean, you know, you got your three meals or whatnot, but you got to supplement, in between meals so you can eat five times a day so you can get shakes in you, bananas or whatever. And we're in college, and I didn't have no NIL deal. So I mean bad food. So I know I was at times, but that's the maturity level of my age at that time. Of course, they wasn't saying, hey, just eat crap. But at that time, man, I got when you lifting weights and eating, that's just a combination. And if you can run, that's a good combination in at the University of Texas.
I'm sorry. So I always was under the assumption that the program is giving you all your food.
Well, yes. But when you're off, you know, at nighttime by yourself and it's 9-10 o'clock at night, you know, the training room isn't open. Mm-hmm. It's about wings, you know, wing stop and wing zone, you know, you order that and you got bad habits as 18 to 22 year olds. And, we eat whatever's there, but yeah.
That's insane. Highly successful at the University of Texas. I mean, won the Dick Butkus Award,
And the Nagurski.
Yeah. Which, if like anyone reads up on him, he was a beast.
Yeah, big time.
I mean, you look at his face and you're like, oh, that guy was a fighter. Right. Chicago Bears, if I'm right. And then he was a pro wrestler. Okay, those boys were not paid all that well back then.
No, not at all.
At what point did you personally know? I mean, there was a lot of hype about you, which was all earned, well-earned hype. When did you know, I'm going to NFL?
So, it's a good question. I'm saying this now because looking back, I was a pretty big deal coming out. I was a parade All-American coming from high school. And being able to come to University of Texas, best thing about coming here was Mack Brown. Mack Brown made sure that, my mom loves Mack Brown. All the parents love, if you're a good recruiter, like you love that coach, right? And I remember Mack Brown talking to my mom, talking to the family. And I mean, as soon as Mack leaves or whatever, my mom's like, hey, we should go on and commit to Texas. I'm like, hold on, mom, let's go through all the process. Like she was telling me how he was talking about you got a certain amount of scholarships and this and this. And I'm like, no, if they want me, they'll wait for me. They'll be good. But that just tells you how much she thought of Mack Brown. Mack Brown was awesome, man, like a second father to everybody. But coming there, he told me, hey, we got three senior linebackers. So this year, probably not your year, right? So when you come in, three, you know, straight up, right? And some players will be like, man, I'm not coming there. You know, I want to play right now. And I said, you know what? Okay, I love when they tell the truth like that. But when we got to camp, I was doing so good. I was like, okay, let's start switching you in a little bit, right? Just, you know, even though we got three senior linebackers, we run a 4-3 system, let's switch you in and out. And then he said, all right, he's been doing pretty good. And he's like, man, every time he gets in, he kills it. And then I guess the halfway through the season, we played Oklahoma. He's like, all right, Let's make a new defense. Let's make a 3-4. Let's put DJ.
And I'm sorry, he was a 4-3 before that, correct?
Yeah, I was 4-3, yeah. And then we changed to a 3-4 to put me in there with the starting group so I can play more. And we used that package like two or three times throughout the year, but after that, I've always switched in and out. I had the most tackles on the team, and I wasn't a starter. So that tells you the impact that I had when I came into the game, and it was pretty cool. I loved it.
So you did not redshirt your freshman year?
I did not redshirt, and I wish I did. You know why? Because we won the national championship. Everybody in my class, Michael Huff, all the guys. I mean, I can name off Cedric Griffin, just the whole nine. They won the national championship, and I was like, I was in the league. I was with the Chiefs. I'm like, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Dude, that's, you know, hindsight is 2020, but yeah. It, there's always that fear factor of it could be the national championship game.
Yeah, we never know, right? Yeah, of course.
That's a hard one. So the defense at Texas was predominantly a 4-3 for most of your career.
Yeah.
And then when you got picked up first round, 15th pick by the Chiefs, you were stepping into a 4-3.
I was correct? Stepping into a 4-3. That is correct. Yes.
Talking to John, he said the transition from high school to college was a lot more difficult than the transition from college to the NFL.
That is true.
You find that to be true?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. Just because there's a big shock, like, oh, my goodness. Like, even the second and third team guys, they're pretty good. I'm talking about college. They're really good. They just, you know, somehow they're not, you know, can't figure out how to get to the starting spot, but everybody's pretty good in college, and you're like, get that initial really shock. When you go from college to the NFL, there's a shock, obviously, but it's not that big of a shock.
The speed is the same.
Yeah, like speed is about the same.
Programs, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's a more mental game. Now it's just scheme-wise and being able to be smart, being able to say, hey, I'm going to move over here just because I think this is coming. And you learn that throughout my years, and the game slows down for you, and you look really good.
Yeah, that's sort of the story of life, is everything is more mental than it is physical.
Yep, it is. Yep.
And you always look at people who, like you, that have just established historic careers, and I bet you still sometimes try new things now that you're retired and you're like, you're in your own head most of the time. Yeah,
absolutely, and I try to go back to when I play ball because that helps me. Because I had a lot of success with it. And there's a lot of great components when you play sports, right? Obviously, in the military, there's so many great components. So you can use that now and you say, man, if I just attack it like, it's not the same thing, but if I attack it like this, good things will happen. This is just a pedigree for good things to happen. And that's kind of how I go about life now.
I have no reservation admitting this. The person that has to remind me of my resume and what I've done is my wife. She sees me like downing myself. She's like, toughen up, buttercup. Yeah. She's like, remember who you are.
Yeah. I can see that.
It's insane.
That's a good thing. That's a good problem to have, just because you're all about the now, right? Because, you know, there's a lot of people who live off of what they did in the past. And even though that matters, you know, life is steady evolving and, being able to have somebody in your corner like that reminds me of my wife too. She's like, man, it's weird for me to get into that mode. Cause I'm like, you know, I feel like, you know, I'm not as humble as I should be. Cause you know, if you think of all those accolades and all those, some things we acquired along the way, you get high on the horse. And as we know, you know, when you get like that, somebody knocks you off, man. You gotta stay head to the ground and don't get distracted. And it's all about the process. It's really who you become in the process. It's not about what you've acquired over the years. That's important, but it's more about who you become through the process. And if you can learn from the good and bad of what you did in the past, it allows you to do things and be successful in every other area of your life.
It's funny you bring up humility, because from everything I've read about you, you were always praised, sometimes criticized for being too humble,
yeah,
and not being loud and vocal like some of the Ray Lewis's of the world.
Yeah,
Is that just your style, something you learned from your mom, Mac?
Yeah, you know, my mom's a school teacher. I've been a school teacher for over 40 years. And so that's the house that I grew up in. I mean, tough lady. Still, I'm still scared of my mom today. So she's that type of influence in my life. Just always staying humble, man. Don't get me wrong. There's times when you got to speak up. You know, that's where leadership comes about. And I do have leadership. But there are times where I am not boasting about certain things that I've done just because I'm on to the next one. You know, it's just like the analogy, you know, you're climbing that mountain and, you know, you at the top of that mountain, then you're at the bottom of the next type of thing, type of mentality. So I've always in life, it's all about life is 10% of what happened to you, 90% on how you respond. So I'm all about the next thing, right? The next thing. How am I getting better? How am I evolving? And it's hard. It's hard at times because sometimes I do have to pull out that DJ on the field because, believe it or not, I'm very mild-mannered now and just really what's the name? But there's you know, it's pros and cons to this. There's an edge when I step on the field, especially when I played, that it's I'm on edge. Like, hey, you know, if somebody says something, you know, I got a quick temper. And it's not a quick temper as in I go all out of whack. It's a quick temper like, okay. Like it's, I'm easily motivated. That's probably a better term. Yeah.
It's funny. In the military, we read about leadership all the time. I mean, the whole thing is a leadership development pipeline, as is football. It's you're developing young men into players, and then even in the NFL for the young players, you've got to mentor them, and that's a life transition. But huge documentary filmmaker, or I'm sorry, well, that actually is true now. I'm a documentary film watcher. Two of the ones that sort of destroyed, one, The Last Dance. Did you watch that about the Bulls?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was amazing. Because, you know, as you're young watching them, you just assume it's this team that's just tightly knit and everyone gets along. Oh. And I should know this. That's not true. Even in the SEAL teams, I loved all my brothers. I definitely did not like all of them. Yeah. I did love them. And not all of them like me. And that's same fine. Here. But how Michael Jordan, and it's the same with the dynasty about the Patriots.
Yeah.
Tony. Oh. Why am I forgetting Tony's last name? Because he talked about it, how he would go off on the younger players, even his peers, if they screwed up. But Michael Jordan was, if you did not perform, Michael Jordan was all over you like Cam on Rice.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal. And I love that because Jordan's the top of the food chain when it comes to just being able to. Yeah, it's just like, man, you want to adopt anything from what he says is freaking gold. And just, I remember that time where he got kind of emotional when he said something about, hey, you know, because I guess people were at the time maybe he was thinking to himself, man, I feel like this is really harsh what y'all are asking me and what people are showing. And he was saying, hey, you know, if you don't play like that or something, he said, you know, that's how I played. Like, if you don't like it, then it is what it is. And he said break or something because he got kind of emotional and whatnot. So
did you have a love-hate relationship with media? Because they can be brutal.
Yeah, I've learned about media. You know, you can control the narrative. Like a lot of people don't think that, you know, just because, you know, you got all these fancy guys or girls talking to you, women talking to you, and they try to put off a certain narrative that actually isn't true or not where you want to go with it. There's times to slow down, think about it, don't say nothing quick, think about it, and then take it where you want to. There are times where you can take stuff where you want to, where that reporter's like, okay, you know, he maybe didn't answer me all the way, but he took it where he wanted to. So it's ways to get around it. I've learned that over the years. I used to be a guy that, you know, I remember one time, my first time in at the University of Texas, that I forgot the reporter's name, but he said, hey, man, you're doing good out there. You I know at Waco, you really didn't learn daily squat, you know, boom, boom. And he started talking. And I'm like, yeah, boom, boom, boom. And they put that in the newspaper, said that Derek Johnson didn't know diddly squat in Waco. And it's like, I didn't say that.
Yeah.
They said it, but yeah. I was just kind of like, yeah, boom, boom, and I talked. And it was in the paper. And my coach was like, hey, what's going yeah. on, you know? I'm like, I didn't say that.
It's irresponsible on their part.
Yeah, it was. It was. It really was.
You say that, and I understand that now at 46, but if I'm getting interviewed as a NFL football player at 25 or 26,
right.
That's a different thing.
That's a very different
thing. That's a very different thing. That's hard to sort of have emotional regulation at that that age, given the passion. You know, you go to the Chiefs and you start making an immediate impact. And it was 2009 they brought in a new defensive coach and they switched to the 3-4?
Yes, sir.
That had to be like, what the?
So yeah, that was a big deal. That was actually a big turning point in my career. This is the first big adversity, believe it or not.
No kidding.
That I've had in my life.
Like, and you admitted it.
Football-wise.
You showed vulnerability.
You're like, hey, yeah.
It's a different system. I've got a lot to learn.
Yeah. I was 26 years old. And in football, I've did a lot up until that point. And I've never had, adversity. Like, I'm talking about adversity where it's like, man, you're in a bad spot right now. And God has really blessed me up until that point. And 26 years old, I was hit with, all right, it was Todd Haley. I've said this story before, but he came in. It was training camp. I was having a little bit of hard time with the 3-4 system. Not crazy hard time, but I wasn't making plays like that. But I had got hurt, ankle, and I was like, man, like I couldn't practice the next day. It was really, really. I like rolled my ankle. So, and you know, Todd Haley started saying, "Oh man," he was a new coach, didn't know me, knew I was at the end of my contract. I was a first round guy. I wasn't his guy, but I was one of the guys that he can depend on at some point. So he's like, you know, I remember Bill Romanowski, and he was telling me all this stuff, and I'm like, Coach, I can't even jog. Like I can't do nothing right now. Now it's crazy. If Andy Reid was there, some other guy would be like, okay, don't practice. Like it's not a big deal. Come back when you're ready, and we can get going. But he was on something different. Cool. So by the time I came back a week later, and I was still kind of hobbling a little bit, but I came back a week later and I was second string. Never been second string in my life before, ever in life. And I'm like, okay, this is different. Okay, let me work through it. And then, but it wasn't a work through thing where it was like, all right, you can earn your spot back. It was just like, hey, we're going to just play you on nickel downs. At the time, 2009, nickel was only 20% of the time. Now nickel is like a actual freaking base defense. Now you'll play 80% of the time. But then it was like, all right, he's playing 20% of the time. It is what it is. We're not a good football team. So he had that liberty to just make an example out of certain people. I don't think he should have made an example out of me.
Yeah.
And I didn't agree with it. But again, life is 10% of what happens to you, 90% of how you respond. So this whole season, I've never done this before. This whole season, I'm playing second string. People asking me, you know, y'all losing games. Like, DJ, like, what? Why aren't you playing? Like, you know.
Well, the fan base was wildly.
They were big on it. Yeah. And I was like, well, hey, I've always said the right things. Even when I want to say, you know, something else. I'm like,
emotional
no.
Emotional regulation.
Yeah. It's like, all right. So coaches, you know, I can control what I can control, my attitude and effort. I got to do this. Boom, boom, boom. Man, the next year, Todd Haley, I remember this. The media was like, before training camp, hey, everybody's talking about Todd Haley said this. Everybody's talking about Derek Johnson. Hey, we're going to have an open competition. You know, whoever wins when it comes to the linebacker stuff. Boom, boom, boom. Cool. That's all I want to hear. I'll tell you what. In 2010 in training camp, every day, I can remember this like it was yesterday. Every single day, I made sure I beat out that other guy. Every single day. So your habits form who you are, right? You know, we're a product of how we spend our time. And being able to do that set a fire in me. Being able to do that set some habits in me that allowed me to make a Pro Bowl every single year after that. Year. So that tells you right there, if you can fight through something that doesn't favor you, and I don't care if that other guy had a really good day, I had a better day. had a better day, right? And I love that story just because that reminds me of being easily motivated. There are times you wake up in training camp and I'm like, man, I don't feel like beating them out. I don't feel like doing this, right? But you know, it's not about our feelings. It's what are we committed to? Or to our feelings? Are we committed to the process? So I'm committed to the process, and I got to tell you, man, I stood on business 2010 in training camp, and it allowed me to make the Pro Bowl or some kind of Pro Bowl honors every year after. It's not a coincidence that happened. So,
you know, people, pride is a deadly sin.
Yeah.
And I actually sort of disagree with this. Pride can be your downfall if not properly handled.
True.
But pride, when I have, I say fumbled, not in the football sense, but fumbled in life or struggled, it has been my pride that I know I am better than this.
Ugh.
That drives me.
And, I like that.
But you know, some people say that's actually unhealthy. I disagree.
No.
Do you think it was your pride?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a belief. A belief is more important than ability, right? If you can believe something, you can really get some things done. Sometimes we look at ability and measure certain things up, or you know, and try to figure out from there. But if you believe, like, that will direct you and guide you into figuring things out. And I had a belief like, no, this guy isn't better than me. I've done this for a long time. Like, this is who I am. I mean, I got the size, I got the speed, I got the strength. I can do whatever. Like, that's my belief. Even if that person doesn't believe, if I believe, good things are happening. God has blessed me to make that happen.
I put in the work.
Yeah.
Belief is great.
Yeah.
Belief without action is a dream.
That is true. It's a dream. Right. Just a dream.
Not getting deep into societal issues, it just seems like a lot of people, one, comparison. With social media, it's like, oh, look what that person has. Yeah. I deserve that. But very few people are willing to put the work in.
Yeah. Because it's harder. It's harder. Yeah, I mean, just think about that. It's whatever's worth working for, it's worth having. Like, you gotta freaking grind. The missing piece always in the work that is the work you're avoiding. If you're avoiding, if you're not where you need to be, it's in the work that you're avoiding at the time. So, that whole old saying, hard work pays off. That's freaking true.
Not to get into the dark side of what some in your profession do, but you know, everyone is always going to seek a shortcut. We know they're just a waste of time, or there's negative impacts maybe a year, 10 years down the line. I mean, you had guys within your profession using the shortcut of, let's say, performance-enhancing drugs.
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
I mean, and I'm not saying you saw it, but what was your perspective on that? You just weren't willing to take that shortcut. And I'm sorry, yeah. I always remember the days of Latimer in the program.
Oh,
one of the greatest films ever.
I like that movie.
Yeah, or Johnny B. Good on the recruiting tour.
Right, yeah.
I mean, what were your thoughts on that without throwing anyone under the bus?
I didn't personally see it. You may expect, you suspect it at times. Mm-hmm. But I was far away from that just because, you know, I was that person that they would look at my body. My body looks better now, but then they were like, man, you're the most unathletic looking athletic person I've ever seen in my life. Like, I didn't really have the abs busting out. I just wasn't a physical specimen like that. And I just knew my craft and my skill on the field would be enough. And if I cultivate that and get better in that sense, then I would be all right. But I never was enticed by it. I understood
why
yes. people do it, because yes. people injuries. Don't know this. Yeah. Injuries and people don't know this, but there's a pressure being a professional athlete. And that I, now that I'm out of it, I'm like, whew, I'm good not having that crazy pressure. Now, pressure,
yes.
you know, pressure can help you. Don't get me wrong. But there are some, I mean, you just don't know what they're thinking upstairs. Like, in the main, like, they're always trying to get better, younger, better, cheaper. It's always, like, from practice to games. Like it's an amount of pressure that some people can't handle. And when you're like that, and when you get that little attention where you're like, man, I took something to help me get stronger or help me get faster, and you're getting and you're seeing that out there on the field, and you're getting benefits from that. I can see how somebody can be like, you know what? If nobody's looking, let me do this. But again, everything that's done in the dark usually comes to the light.
I'm not saying it wasn't used in special operations, and I knew why guys were using them.
Yeah.
I mean, we're a high injury profession as well, and some guys were, as the saying goes, playing hurt. But you know, funny you say that. I've always heard the phrase: the worst thing a football player can do is look in the mirror from a physique perspective. Mm. And I mean, you look at Tom Brady; he takes his shirt off. You're like, "Ooh, man, put that shirt back on."
Right.
But I mean, some of the best athletes I've ever seen. We called them like the iron marshmallows. Mm. There was no definition to them whatsoever, but they would beat you every which way from Sunday.
That was me.
You know, so as you look back, I mean, one of the NFL leading tacklers, I mean, historic. Does it seem like a blur now?
It does seem like a blur. The 14 years I played in the NFL and being the Chiefs all-time leading tackler, it's like, man, you play linebacker. Like, that's a spot that it's not DB. You know, I'm in the fire. I'm in there. A lot of hits to the head, a lot of, you know, hits all over, right? And you come out with your sound mind, sound body. It's pretty cool. That's the humbling part where I'm like, whew.
You did good. Yeah. You did good, kid.
Yeah. Just like that. So, and it was a blur. I mean, it's 14 years, and it goes by fast. Whenever I talk to rookies and people that are going to NFL, enjoy it, man. Freaking enjoy it. Yes, a lot of pressure. But you're living your dream, man. Like, you don't want to get old. There's a lot of people in this line what I'm about to say. Oh man, if I would have did this, if I would have worked harder. Yes. It's like, no, that's a lot of people in that line. I don't want to hear that, especially if you're in the thick of it and you have an opportunity to go to the NFL and you have an opportunity to live out your dream. Go all the way, man. Go all the way.
Yeah. It's hard to stay present in the moment when you have that much pressure on you.
It is.
You're always thinking about tomorrow.
It's easier said than done. True. But you take advice from others that's been there. And not that you won't bump your head, but you won't bump it as many times.
So you had Achilles tendon issues towards the end of your career.
I did.
You shift over to the Patriots. And I know some guys will play until they're cut. And it takes a lot of maturity.
Yeah.
And let's just say a lot of maturity to make the decision that, like, this is my time. You made that call. No one else made that call for you. What was going through your mind when that happened?
Yeah, I didn't. I was hoping it was the Patriots at that time. That's why I let you get on and finish that line. But it was the Raiders my last year.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I apologize.
No, it's good. Because Raiders didn't turn out good. So I'm like, Patriots, that may have been better in 2018.
I apologize. Yeah.
But so I paid 13 years for Chiefs. My 12th year, I can honestly say, I'm like, ooh, I'm getting older. I'm getting older. And believe it or not, 12 years in, I'm getting older anyway. So I've already beat the odds with that. But I popped my Achilles my tenth year in the league and my 12th year in the league. So my 10th year, when I popped it, the next year I went to the Pro Bowl. So that tells you I fought my butt off. And then I did it in my 12th year, and at the end of the season, then 13th. My 13th season with the Chiefs, the last year, that was the first year the Chiefs was like, all right, we got to start switching somebody in with you, because the whole film, playing 60, 70 plays, I was making 4-5 tackles, right? Not doing – production wasn't as good, and I understood. I hated it at that time. I'm like, man, it's halfway through the season, and you know, the guy they were switching me in and out with, he was more reckless and faster than me, and I knew that. Of course, mentally – I got some things that's working for me, but I get it. Like, the older you get, you don't get as reckless. you think about something, you say, ooh, you know, like you're about to run in there.
You'll heal the sand.
Oh, yeah. And back in the day, I mean, you got to hit it and get it. Like whenever you think it, boom, go. And that's how you make the big plays and all that stuff. So they did that the second half of my 13th year. And guess what? I made 5 and 6 tackles a game after that, which is was just like, man, you're getting more production because I was able to move quickly and fast with all the people with my 30 plays. So after that, I still wanted to go with the Chiefs, and it was like the new GM at that time, Brett Veach, who's awesome. He actually told me, he said, hey, we want to go in a different direction. We want new leadership from the a younger up-and-coming linebacker, so we're going to go out and get somebody. I would have played for pennies with the Chiefs. They could have kept me on there and been a mentor, and I would have, you know, I still had something left in me, especially on a winning team. If you're an older guy, if you're on a winning team, it can work. You can send me in and do some stuff, and I won't hurt the team. But that didn't happen, and I was like, man, I still got a little bit left in me. So John Gruden hit me up, hey, let's, you know, I just got to the Raiders. Let's, you know, they were still in Oakland. Let's give it a go. I said, okay, let's do it. And I tell you what, during training camp, it was awesome. Being in Napa Valley, I'm like, this is pretty cool. I knew I was in foreign territory, though. When I'm out there, I knew everything mentally. I just didn't have it no more. And I would go back to my room. Not that everybody knew, but I wasn't making the plays. I'm the person doing training camp, just mess up offense. Just like, boom, get mad, and boom, and I'm making interceptions. I'm hitting people. I wasn't doing it anymore. It was like, ooh. It, for me, I was like, man, I'm almost there, and I'm thinking about certain stuff. So we watch film. I'm like, I'm looking in my mind, telling me, I'm like, go hit this guy, go. And I couldn't. Something was off, right? Mother Nature of time, obviously. But we got to the season. I did okay. I only played during the nickel down or half of the downs. And we got to the middle of the season. And Gruden, when you got older players and you're not winning and you're a bad football team, you got to ship guys out. Just how it is. And they was like, we got to start cutting guys. And I was like, I've never been relieved when Raiders was like, all right, we're cutting DJ, we're doing it. And I was like, went back here, got a house, settled, and I was pretty I was calm about it. I was this game, I'm fortunate enough to have this game always lets you go before you do, and that's a hard thing for people that play sports for a long time. And I'm in a position where I'm like, I am relieved and have peace with football, which is a big deal because that can linger into any, you know, all other bad scenarios after football. And but I can truly say I didn't have no more to give. The tank was going down. So
the body ain't like scotch. Mm-mm. It sometimes does not get better with age. That is a hard call for someone of your caliber to make, but. To move out of the way for the younger generation to come, mm-hmm. and for your mental health, that's I'm so happy to hear. Unlike other athletes we've interviewed, that you exited the way you wanted to.
Absolutely.
Peacefully.
Absolutely,
that's great.
Yes, sir.
So how does it feel? And I believe you're eligible this year.
Oh,
how's it gonna feel when you put on that yellow coat?
Man, you know what? Let's speak that into existence. That's pretty cool. Being able to be eligible for Hall of Fame is awesome. So that's like my career, regardless if I get it or not, doesn't depend on that.
Oh, you're gonna get it
because
that's
you being
bashful and humble.
You're gonna get it. That's that's what you wanted. That really confirms everything you've done in the past. And I've got some Hall of Fame so far. I got 5. I got Texas High School Hall of Fame. I got the State of Texas Hall of Fame. I got the State of Missouri Hall of Fame. And I have University of Texas Hall of Fame. And I have the last one was the College
Hall of Fame.
Football Hall of Fame. So God's really blessed me, man. So that last one, that'll be – That'll be awesome. I got to come back on here. That'll be.
it's going to happen. Funny enough, I looked at polls. 70% said without a doubt you should be in the Hall of Fame. There was 10% that were didn't have an opinion. And then there was 20% that said no way. Mm-hmm. And as I read that, I'm like, you know what that 20% is? Those are opposing fans that just hate the Chiefs. And it shows
or hate the Longhorns.
Or hate the Longhorns, a bunch of Aggies. It is amazing. Here's one of the things I've learned. There are a lot of people I dislike. Yeah. And there's a lot of people who dislike me. And I'm fine with that. Yeah. I can't control your feelings. And we're all entitled to our perspectives based off our life experiences. But I will never take away from somebody what they've earned. And that 20%. That is like the hardcore NFL or collegiate fans that just are opposing fans, and they don't have the ability, the maturity to say, "Nah, he was great. He crushed my team." They're still bitter. You know, you've had a long career, in many ways, you are defined by football for what you did on the field.
Right.
For you personally, I mean, you love the sport. You're happy with that definition. But do you always want to be defined by football?
I do not. Football is what I did, so that's not who I am. Who I am is a server at heart. I love to serve. I think you find your greatest gifts through serving. I really do, man. I really do. And there's ways to get compensated for different things that you do so you can make money and do stuff for your family and add on to your legacy or financially or whatever. But being a server, that's me, man. That's me, being able to help somebody. Your purpose, if it's all about you, not real purpose. Not real purpose. It's got to be about others. Got to be about others.
You know, I say that to my wife sometimes. You know, I bought my first, this is me, bought my first new car sitting out there at the age of 46. Because I used to get like the dealer specials, you know, on a military salary. You'd be like, hey, how many miles on that? 3,000. I'm like, hey, can you take 10 off? So she's like, I'm so proud. You deserve that. I'm like, it's not about me. It's not about, don't get me wrong. I'm happy to have my new car. I love it. But it's about you and the kids. And speaking of that, I mean, you've been at work. You're a father of six.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a full-time job.
Most people say, you know, what are you doing now? You know, I'm like, once I tell them how many kids, they're like, okay, don't tell me nothing else. I know what you're doing now.
Yeah, how many kids did you have when you were in the league?
Four. So two more, and they're little, 3 and 5 years old. So that's really the work. You know, I got high school kids. We got in elementary or whatnot. But they're not as hard because they can cope and do things by themselves. But the 3 and 5 year old are the ones where they're busy, man. They're busy, and I enjoy it because I have time, right? You know, I have time. I'm not. Eventually, I'll do some coaching later on in life.
No kidding.
I will dibble and dabble with that. But right now, being a family man and being a server, helping my community is my main focus.
I caution to say, because I know you got a lot of things going on, you have the time to be more involved in their life. When you were in the league as a father, did that definitely impact?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We're busy. And when I'm there, I'm not there, right? You know, like when I'm playing with the kids, I'm thinking like, man, I got to do this. I got to take care of my body. We got this team. We playing against Tom Brady this week. It's like, boom. It's like, it's ongoing. Your mind has to be going. You know, some people say, I never get, and maybe you can shed some light on this, how somebody says, you know, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to back up on this. It's like, man, I'm going to back up. You don't go into something saying, now there's things that happen where, you know, you have some fallbacks, but I don't have a plan B. This is going to work. And when you go about it that way, when you have that energy, it works. It freaking works. And is it a risk taker? Yeah, but it works. I mean, you gotta have a mindset of all in. If you're not all in, being a professional, being in the military, no chance.
Yeah, the family definitely sacrifices having their. It's, and if people have a comment on that, who haven't lived in that life, because I deployed 10 times, dude, and then when we're training, for the SEAL team specifically in San Diego and Virginia Beach, we don't have training grounds. So we'd have to travel to Texas or Vegas or Mississippi. So we were always on the road. We were gone over 300 days out of the year, and that was just a training year. So when we're deployed, you're deployed for 4 months straight. Yeah. And then when you get back, you get a week off, and then you go right back into that training schedule. And if people don't have that experience, you know, I've gotten some comments like, well, you should have been involved in your kids' lives more. You're not wrong with that statement, but you live that life as a high performer in some profession that keeps you on the road or keeps you engaged. It's just,
if you want to do anything great, there's going to be some sacrifice. Yeah. There's going to be some sacrifice. And there's some sacrifice where you say, man, you know, it is what it's a tough sacrifice. But when you get around to it, you just got to, the cards you're dealt, God's blessed you already. So take it from there. Take it from there.
We did have Terrell Owens on, and I asked him about balance, and I almost got the Allen Iverson, like, we're talking about practice? And I asked him about balance. He's like, balance? I said, what the fuck are you talking about? He's like, when you're trying to achieve greatness, there is no balance. And I was shocked. I was expecting a different answer, and I'm like, oh, he's actually right. He's just very candid about
it. Yeah, I get that. You have to, because the people that you're out there with, when I'm going against the Terrell Owens, right? Played against him before. You think I'm going to have some balance, like, oh, I got to do this. Football's over here. And I ain't going to be able to tackle him. I'm not going to be able to match what he's got going on. I got to be all in. That's the only way. Only way. We're talking professional. I'm talking from what I've known and what I've experienced. Got to be all in.
But I think that rings true in any profession. If you're not willing to sacrifice everything, then you're just not going to touch greatness. And you did. So service, I mean, you've got the Defend the Dream Foundation, which is the reason we're having you here.
Yeah.
Where did this come about, the idea? Or did somebody approach you? Or was this your new? And just tell us all about Defend the Dream Foundation and why you're passionate about it.
Yeah, Defend the Dream Foundation, it caters to inner city kids through education. So what it is that... before I get into it, 2013, for 6 or 7 years, I was doing things in the community, being able to read to sick kids, being able to build playgrounds and doing a whole slew of stuff. Things that I still do right now, doing stuff for foster home kids, doing stuff. But I didn't have something that, you know, that resonated with me where I'll say, hey, man, when I get tired, what am I still passionate about? That's how you know your purpose, right? So I'm like, you know what? How did I grow up? You know, I grew up a teacher's kid, you know? So you know what? And education is super important, super, super important, especially for inner city kids, especially for low income areas, and being able to attack it with the literacy part, being able for those kids to be on grade level reading before they leave elementary school. So my foundation, Defend the Dream Foundation, caters to inner city kids. But what is what we do? We go in and refurbish and enhance their library. So what we do in Title I elementary schools, we go in there and we paint it super nice, functional furniture, and we give them over 1,000 new age-appropriate books for these kids. And we're catering to kids. So when you walk in there, we want kids to be excited about, that's the heart of the school, the library part, and being able to walk in there and see this nice library and colorful and all this stuff, has some quotes on the wall and all this stuff, but then to have age-appropriate books that they can actually, a diverse book too, so it can relate to these kids that are in this community. And when you can do that, you can give them the proper resources to help them to reach their full potential at the end of the day, and literacy is where it is. Education is where it is. If you want to change your situation, I'm talking inner city kids, I'm talking really any kids, but we're talking low income areas. I don't care what they want to be in life. Like that reading and writing piece, if they can get that at an early age, they can help their family like tremendously. And to get them at an early age, that's why I focus on elementary school. And the science behind it is getting them on age level reading. There's a bad stat that talks about inner city kids, if they're not on grade level reading before they leave elementary school, half of them do not finish high school.
You're kidding me.
Half. And we talk about the ones that don't have the right resources, you know, to catch up. If my son was behind in sixth or seventh grade, I would get him something to to, you know, to resources to get them right. But when you don't have those proper resources, when they leave elementary school, they're in danger of not finishing high school, which is a bit bad deal. So education is the key. I mean, I've known that forever. I grew up in an inner city kid, and my mom was a school teacher, and that's what I do know, preaching elementary kid education to these kids and knowing that's the way out.
Defend the Dream, that title, does that come from the Martin Luther King, I Had a Dream?
That's
a beautiful, beautiful speech, historic speech. How many schools have you guys?
That's good. 15 in Kansas City. So I moved it from Kansas City to here, and you know I'm real about it because, you know, I'm retired and still doing this, right? Mm-hmm. 15 in Kansas City and three, about to be four in a couple months here in Austin. So right now in Austin, we have Pickle Elementary, we have Langford Elementary, we have Barbara Jordan Elementary. I'm forgetting the other school. Oak Springs Elementary School. By the way, when I tell you about my foundation, I mean Austin has really did a great job by supporting me. You talk about Kendra Scott; she does half of them here in Austin. So,
no kidding.
Oh man, so it's all in. I mean, COVID Cadillac. Everybody believes in it. Everybody knows that education is the key. We all know that. But being able to change these kids' lives, being able to do the ribbon cutting there. Every time I come to the schools and these kids, they see all the ribbon cutting, and they see the cameras, and everybody's coming up, the advisory board, everybody's looking on, and I have these kids. I give them some kind of mentorship, a speak, a talk, or whatnot, and then they would say, every time they always raise their hand and say, hey, why us? Like, why are you here? Like, you know, and I'm like, man, I'm like, because you're worth it, because you're special. We want it for you. It's less about us. Everybody's here for you. And I let them know that they're important. So, man, they love it. Plenty of kids says, this is the best day of my life. We call it DJ's Discovery Den, but this is a refurbished, enhanced space of their library, dolling it all up, giving them new books. They say, this is the best day of my life. So when I can have that impact, man, I love it. I love it. And my three staples when it comes to what my foundation is built on, it's built on love, it's built on excellence, and it's built on purpose. The love piece is being able to serve with care. Being able to make sure that person is thought about more than myself. And then the excellent piece, I got that from being able to be in the NFL and being able to do things at a high level, right? Not just slop things up there. Make sure I take pride in what I'm doing. And then the purpose part is just making sure we make sure it's the mission is all about the objective, and that's obtaining more education, being able to seek higher education for these kids, because that's the way out.
Where do you want to take this? I know you guys probably have a 5-year strategy. Actually, before we get to that, I hope the University of Texas, with one of the largest endowments, is getting involved as much as they
can. They are.
I'm sending them a warning signal.
Believe it or not, these refurbished spots, DJ's Discovery Dens, are in four. Well, next month it'll be in four so far here in Austin. They are longhorned out a little bit. So just to let you know where that comes from. And oh yes, UT is all in with this. So this is awesome. But you talk about that 5-year plan. I'm today we're actually right after this. I'm talking to my director and we're going over that. Like, that's a big deal, because you want to go anywhere far. If you want to have some success, you got to plan for that. Got a plan for that.
Plan to fail. Fail, yep, to plan. Yep. Or I'm sorry, if you fail to plan, plan to fail.
Plan to fail, right.
DJ, I mean, one, every idea starts at a grassroots level and it's got to grow from there. Yeah. And you have been. It sounds like 20 schools in all now. But, I mean, we're talking about a massive problem. Would you ever get involved at a governmental level? To start holding, and let me say this, the potential of this country, if it's unified, can do anything. You look at World War II, we stood up the largest industrial machine to fight two wars on two fronts against two massive empires, and we won. It seems like no one is taking the problem with the inner city black community seriously. Like, if America really cared, like, hey, we could turn this around quickly. Are there plans to get involved at that level? Because don't get me started on government. Yeah. I worked there for 20 years. It doesn't seem like anyone within government is actually doing anything effective.
So that's great that you mentioned that government-wise, on a bigger scale. Yes, we do want to take it nationwide. Of course, it's got to grassroots level. It's got to start somewhere. But that's the plan. You got to give yourself room to grow, right? Mm-hmm. That's important. And believe it too. Believe it. Not just, you know, I'm talking about leave room to believe you can grow there. And that's what we're all about, is being able to start here in Austin. I started in Kansas City, but really it's better now. These are $50,000-$60,000 mini capital projects that we do. So these are not small deals that we do, and we got them lined up at least one or two for the next couple of years. Schools, we can do more. You know, all it takes is money, they say.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, but when it comes to getting on a government level, going bigger, absolutely. So I'm glad you mentioned that. I'll be putting that on a blackboard today when we do our little 5-year plan.
Well, I would not want to be on the other side of you on the starting line. So I have no doubt that you'll do it. If people want to give, does your foundation accept donations?
Absolutely. The website is DerekJohnsonFoundation.org. DerekJohnsonFoundation.org.
Okay. And their money will go to assisting with...
Yes, the money will go. And I'm big on books. Believe it or not, library books cost $20-$25 a book. And that's because of the durability over the years. I mean, we go to these schools and their books in here from 30, 35 years old. I mean, water damage and all this stuff. But being able to provide them age-appropriate new books, that's where the money goes. That's. I mean, don't get me wrong. I can help with the pain and do all that stuff, functional furniture. But the books are the most important. We want to provide more books for these kids. So it's $25 a book.
So when it comes down to it, each project is really closer to $100,000, the refurbish and the books.
Honestly, yeah. Okay. Or you could say 75 will really cap it off. 75 will really cap it off.
Can people donate books or?
We want to get new books. We don't have a system for, man, I get that question all the time. So again, that's something that I need to plan out, that because we can use that. That's something you can use, and we need to figure that out, because I get that question all the time. Like, hey, I got a slew of books that you can use, and we're all about the new age appropriate book, but we can use that too. I want to. I love the foundation because it's less about me and it's more about how we can help these kids. And when you get people that are on the same like minded individuals, man, you can do some great things.
When everyone is rowing in the same direction, regardless of the personalities, egos involved. Yeah, it's pretty powerful. Yep. And you've shown that. Well, DJ, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, man.
We're excited to write this article, and we'll push the foundation in that. Can't wait to see you coach.
Oh, man.
I heard that A&M is hiring some defensive coaches. I don't know if you'll jump that ship. I'm joking.
Oh, man. I'd be start itching if I put that on Maroon on.
You would have some haters. No, hey, man. Kudos to what you're doing for the next generation. They're always worth it. And it's just been an honor to have you, man.
Thank you so much, Mike.
All right, guys. This has been another episode of the Men's Journal Everyday Warrior Podcast. Hey, like we ask, go leave a review. We actually read them and we get better. All right, guys. Till next time. Out here.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all new Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.